Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 24th day of March 2010, and today I'm joined for my monthly visit by Greg Nicoletos, the 100% organic, non-cyborgian mind behind WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com, and we're going to be having our monthly conversation on all the latest in the SciTech control grid. Greg, thanks for coming on once again.
Thanks for that, James. It's the best intro I've ever had.
Well, that's an honor, considering you've been on some big shows, so I will take that as a compliment.
It's good not to be a cyborg, basically. So
it really is, isn't it? Well, how are things in the land down under this evening?
Similar things are occurring with us with the medical agenda, you know, with the socialization of medicine. So very similar to obviously what's happening with Obamacare in the USA. We're also having a push to, you know, electronic health records. The one thing of interest that has actually struck me is the plan or the agenda anyway is that each Australian will be issued with a unique 16-digit identifying number, which is actually the same as the Indian unique ID number as well, which will also have 16 digits. And the VeriChip, as you know, your listeners would know, also generates a unique 16-digit number. So The question is, you know, have they actually chosen 16 digits just by pure luck, or, you know, are we seeing something actually aligning, which is, it's quite scary.
Well, actually, I was just referring to the weather, but you're jumping right head first into it. All right. Well, you just dropped a bombshell. That is really, really coincidental, isn't it? That's pretty amazing stuff. So 16 digits. I'm wondering what else we're being electronically encoded with that 16 digits. I wonder about new forms of biometric ID and things. But certainly, the fact that VeriChip and these other health records are being sort of hardwired in to be similar. That's very interesting,
it is,
isn't it?
And it's a global agenda. I mean, it's moving across the board. I mean, when you look at the UK, very similar agenda, you know, that we have to move the records to, you know, electronic health records. We can't trust paper. We basically need everything on central databases so we can obviously provide you with better service. And it just seems to be the same, you know, violin song playing in different countries. So, you know, we couldn't be further away from the United States. But it's almost as though it's a master plan, which has far-reaching tentacles, you know.
That's right. And that's kind of picking up from last month's conversation where we were delving into how this plan is unfolding simultaneously in multiple countries, almost as if it's been planned that way ahead of time by the international corporations that don't care about individual nation states and are usurping our national sovereignty. But that's, it's very, very interesting. Well, actually, I wanted to start out today just by congratulating you on your recent video. You came out with a very interesting, entertaining, and informative cartoon about the positive ID, shall we say, VeriChip Corporation. So why don't you tell people a little bit about that video?
What we did, I mean, you know, I have obviously friends as other people have, and what we were actually doing is we're going through you know, channel views and the like, to see what the retention of the actual user is in regards to, you know, documentaries when they go in excess of, let's say, 30 to 40 to 15 minutes or 50 minutes. And what we decided to do is we started looking for some patterns to see, you know, what videos basically are viewed the most. And what we came up with is the cartoon angle, which is coupled with humor, which obviously, you know, introduces things that you could not obviously introduce utilizing, you know, real actors. So we just took a side step and went, look, you know, we'll experiment with this. And it also came out of frustration, James. I mean, you know, like the documentaries that we've done, you know, with one mainframe, we obviously use, you know, New York Times bestselling author Edwin Black. It was, you know, a bulletproof documentary. But, you know, you have a documentary like that and you invest a lot of time, effort, marketing, you know, you put your heart and your soul into it. And, you know, the way I look at it, you know, people release silly, stupid videos that go on to have 1 million, 2 million, 6 million views. And our video, you know, didn't scratch the surface of that. So, so I guess our angle that we're going into now, we will still release serious documentaries, but what we have also realized is the attention span of the average user out there, especially when you go into the younger demographic, it's very much, you know, a takeaway mentality, as in, I want my food now, and if you can't entertain me within 5 minutes or get the message across in that time, well, I'll just go to another YouTube video. So it's been actually quite successful, and it's opened up the movement to people that obviously wouldn't watch, you know, hard-hitting documentaries that are backed by, you know, historical evidence and the like. So we will definitely be going down that path more so, and we will have also a Naked Scanner cartoon, which will be coming out hopefully by end of this month, and Scott Silverman will be making another.
Awesome. Well, actually, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because it was genuinely entertaining and extremely informative. So it's a great feeling to see a video like that get lots of views, because it has real information in it, even though it is a little bit more of a lighthearted take. But I think, as I mentioned in our email, and I'd like to repeat it for the listeners out there, I think it's really valuable to have a lot of different approaches to this, to have the serious documentaries, but also to have cartoons and lots of different ways of getting this information out there, because our consciousness is formed and shaped and influenced from so many sources and so many levels, acting and pushing on so many different buttons, that I think we, as the alternative media, have to pick that up, and also, you know, try to reach people in a number of different levels, and you know, people like Edward Bernays and people like that have known really for decades and decades and decades, if not centuries, that people are affected by the subconscious and by humor and by things like that, more, even more so than they are affected by straight up presentation of facts and information. So I think that's something that we have to understand and take to heart. And rather than try to shape human nature into what we want, we have to some extent accept human nature for what it is. So my hat's off to you for putting out such a quality.
No, thank you. And I mean, we got slammed by, you know, a certain demographic, obviously, you know, the right wing conservative. But I guess after, you know, we weathered the storm, and for the listeners out there, I did actually email James and I said, look, have we overstepped the line here? Because it was quite confusing, I guess, on our side, that, you know, you are telling a story of a company which is really housed by psychopaths. I mean, this company wants to microchip yourself, your children, and the rest of your lineage. Basically enslave you, brand the human species, and then you obviously pay them, you know, a service fee as well for the privilege. So for us, what we did is we basically just took on a storyteller approach. But what I did also realize is a lot of people can't actually separate, you know, what the message, how the message is being told, and who the real enemy is. I mean, you know, so there was a bit of confusion after, you know, we had some backlash, but at the same time, you know, the video itself did actually win Video of the Week, which was on an actual mainstream TV show out here in Australia called Hungry Beast. So that went out to, you know, millions of people, basically. So and what was funny is we released two versions of the video. We had the clean version and the explicit version. And the actual TV channel actually picked up the explicit version. So it just goes to show you, you know, that's what the market works.
Right. Well, that's awesome. I didn't know that happened. And, you know, it rings a bell. I think I may have even actually have heard about that show, although I'm obviously not in Australia and I've never seen it. But I think that's a pretty big show from what I remember.
It is a very big show. I mean, we have really two good shows in Australia. We have Chase's War on Everything, which right. I'm sure everyone saw when they did the Osama.
They dressed up as Bin Laden and tried to get in the G8 or something like that.
And they did, and they did. Right. I mean, the guys are geniuses. And then you have Hungry Beast, which focuses on, you know, they actually do some hard-hitting journalism, so they'll focus on, you know, Google, or they'll focus on biometrics. And in this day and age, it's just so rare to see good journalism that when you see it, you almost are astounded and think to yourself, you know, what has TV become? It's basically a mockery of what it should be.
That's right, but it's awesome to know that videos like that are getting out there in a big way in places like Australia. So definitely, my hat's off to you for that.
Much appreciated, thanks, James.
All right, well, let's dive right into this month's topic. And this month, I wanted to talk specifically about the types of technology that's beginning to be unrolled right now. That's being touted as mind reading machines that are going to be able to allegedly scan our brainwaves and our biometrics and whatever else that they can detect from afar. That will show that Mr. Nicoletos or Mr. Corbett are not actually regular, informed, concerned citizens who love their fellow human beings and want everyone to be free, autonomous individuals, but are in fact dastardly Al-Qaeda operatives. So we've seen this meme popping up lately, and for instance, there's a video out there that's been making the rounds lately, but I think it's actually a few years old from Homeland Security about a new system called Malintent that's apparently going to be able to use non-physically intrusive sensing technology to detect heart rates and other types of things to find if someone's being devious. But this is, I think, just one example of a sort of broader category of technology that's being brought up right now. So what are we talking about in terms of this technology, and what's the history of the idea of being able to read someone's mind electronically?
Well, that really goes back to, you know, it's really about pre-crime, and what pre-crime basically is, it was actually popularized, you know, by the Minority Report. So most people will go, you know, I've viewed the actual movie. And what the movie actually did, it gave a vehicle, like, you know, predictively programming the audience that when we actually see events now unfolding, you know, similar to what you're mentioning with the FAST program, which is the future attribute screening technology, how people basically okay that in their mind or you know, state that, you know, that this is just technology moving forward, you will quite often hear the person going, oh, yeah, that's from, you know, the Minority Report. So it just goes to show you how important the vehicle of Hollywood is for the unrolling agenda. So what pre-crime really is, it is a case of profiling an individual to determine the actual likelihood of the person actually committing a crime. So what we need to look at is, you know, is this a model that is actually being used currently? And there was an actual report just, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, where there was a gentleman called David Piles who was actually apprehended after he was, you know, sacked from his work. They stated he was a disgruntled employee. Now, the gentleman went out and bought three guns. Now, you know, legally bought these three guns, but it turned out to be a massive police operation using over five police agencies. I think it was at least two SWAT teams. And what they basically did is based on, you know, somebody taking, at the end of the day, generalized distorted data, stating, you know, this guy's disgruntled. He has gone out and bought three guns, even though he's done it through legal means. Now we can just basically just continue this distorted view. And let's just say that he's now going to be going out and killing people, you know, like the people that work in the postal office, as we've seen. Now, it was sort of a landmark case because they were actually given the authority to not arrest the guy, but to actually, you know, make David Piles enter a mental evaluation facility for assessment. So what we need to look at is this is now starting to set precedent. So it's a case of, you know, I truly believe in, you know, the predictive programming model where they are setting the guiding stones, if you like, of, you know, what will happen. And we this gentleman here, he didn't do anything wrong. At the end of the day, he was, you know, released from work. He could have been disgruntled. I mean, you know, currently where America is at with, you know, the financial crisis and the like, I'm sure you'd find a lot of disgruntled, you know, workers out there. But to, you know, in the land of the free and the brave, to actually go ahead and do that, Well, you know, that's a violation of human rights, basically. And then to go back one stage, you've also got how it ties into, you know, George Orwell's thought crime. So the question again, James, was I've just gone off track, I think, a bit.
Well, I wanted to start getting into the history of this type of technology and where it's coming from. But you raise a very good point there when you're talking about us sort of being in the we're in a pattern where we're being programmed into accepting this type of this idea, the general idea. And then I think we'll be seeing more and more of the technology roll out in the future. But I'm thinking back to things like polygraph tests and things which have been largely discredited as just quackery, but have been accepted for so long as, you know, electronic devices for telling if somebody's telling the truth or things like that, which I think is to a large extent has helped to shape our perception that electronics can be used to read our minds in some key senses. And I think as we see the technology improving around us in so many different ways, we're going to be softened up and expecting that technology will also be improving in this aspect, even though I don't think, I guess I'll just lay my cards on the table. I think it's all quackery, and I think they're just going to use a lot of spinny objects and flashy lights to convince us that some machine is doing something, and it's just going to pop out, oh, so-and-so is a terrorist, and he has terrorist intentions, and that's... that'll be a court of law. Okay, let's use that as a reason
and,
to move
and look,
against
him. The point is what you bring up, you know, with the FARS program, which was, you know, the Department of Homeland Security. Now, initially when that program was released, it was released under the name of Project Hostile Intent. And there was a bit of a backlash, obviously, by, you know, the general populace, you know, stating, in America where you basically have freedom of speech and freedom of movement under the Constitution, etc. So what did the Department of Homeland Security do? They, you know, let's tweak the words. So Project Hostile Intent then became the FAST program. FAST meaning we can obviously screen you extremely quickly and you can get to your baseball game on time, but you might have to walk through 2 to 3 checkpoints. You might have to be interrogated by a neuro-linguistic programming, you know, expert in the field who can obviously pace and lead you down the track to almost, you know, where you can actually incriminate yourself. So the interrogators as well, that what we need to look at, the guys that end up working with the CIA, the FBI, they are master communicators. And quite often, the subject that is actually being interviewed can actually be paced and led by someone who totally understands the syntax, if you like, of language. They truly understand sentence structuring, how to manipulate language, and how to end up in a position that obviously benefits the person interrogating rather than the actual possible, and I use the word possible, threat to the system. So, I mean, anyone can say at the end of the day, if one is going through, you know, a particular checkpoint and you get pulled over by a Department of Homeland Security, you will start sweating more. You know, your breathing will increase and become more rapid. And I'm sure, you know, you will start thinking thoughts of malintent, as they say. The question, though, is what happens if, for myself, I'm walking through one of those particular checkpoints? I have in history looked at, you know, what government has done, whether you look at government-sponsored terrorism. I have an opinion of 9/11, and I don't have much regard, let's say, for the sentinels or the protectors of our liberty. Now, when I do I then go into those particular situations and go, okay, look, people that have actually beaten lie detectors have been, you know, told to take, I don't know, I think the dosage is 40 milligrams Inderil, which is, I think it's polypropanol and also Valium. And that has actually been proven to actually beat lie detector tests. So, I mean, can we then start saying, well, you know, will the real terrorists then basically start being on a drug cocktail basically to evade this? And the question is the people that are passing through, how many people that are totally innocent, like you said, will actually be caught up in a web of total quackery. So when one goes back to it, the data that I basically managed to extract is when they actually, you know, that they did the FAST program, which was the Hostile Intent program originally. The Department of Homeland Security, the gentleman's name was John Verrico. He went on to say, look, we're close to 78 to 80% being correct. So they said, you know, that is a fantastic batting average. You know, we're getting 80% of people that are basically guilty. Now, these people that have actually been experimented on, if you like, have all been primed for the actual, you know, whether it's the position of being told that, you know, this is what you have to do. You have to try and move contraband, you know, from point A to point zero. They've been told they're carrying contraband. So all these examples have been under controlled conditions and have never really been tested in the real field. So, you know, if a real terrorist, for example, went through the actual system, there is no way to actually collate the data because it's a non-event. These things just realistically don't happen. But for me, you know, when the Department of Homeland Security, you know, John Verica goes on and states, you know, our batting average is 80%, I mean, what does that mean? We have a 20% failure rate. So for every 100 people, you would have 20 people that are basically accused of a pre-crime. And the pre-crime itself is not a crime because it's based on theory and pure delusion that this person will go on and actually commit a crime. So, you know, like you said, this isn't only quackery, this is insanity.
Yeah. Well, the point is it's dangerous quackery. It's not. It's something that's going to it will create a system whereby, like in Orwell with O'Brien's co-worker, I can't remember his name, who gets turned into the thought police by his children, and he says, "Well, I don't remember saying anything. I don't know if I said anything bad about Big Brother, yeah. but if I'm in here, I must have. So, well, okay. So people will just, you know, be conditioned to accept it when they get ratted in. And I mean, it sounds like ridiculous political satire at this point, but that's truly the way that society is being shaped at this juncture, and I think we really have to start calling out this technology right now, because I really do think it is quackery, and I don't think we can trust their 80% figure.
And that's the point, I guess, what you bring up there, James, is the fact that they are happy to go out to market and state we are happy with 80%. I mean, are they happy with locking up 20 people out of every 100 that attend, you know, whether it's a football game? And what we need to realize is these particular applications, you know, these physiological behavioral screening technologies will actually be in, you know, whether you want to call it mobile vans or particular vehicles that you can obviously dismantle. You can have them at, you know, whether it's the football game, or you can have them at particular airports. And as funding obviously increases, you know, with this war on terror and the like, and the actual budget that Congress is now giving defense, it's really endless money supplies. And, you know, I mean, it also fits into, you know, DARPA's lie or no lie to the system. So the goal itself is really to measure the person in real time, and to basically be able, through a sensor network, and the sensor network itself is obviously being built by, you know, Hewlett-Packard, it's been built by Sun, it's been built by Cisco, obviously by IBM, and that all fits into, you know, the Internet of Things, which is where every object is basically, you know, radio frequency ID tagged, everything is interconnected. But more than that, where they actually are moving this all to, the goal is to have people-based sensor networks. So where people are the critical component of the network, because it's, you know, it's really the person. It's, you know, where we're moving to now, the military-industrial complex, when you actually look at the data, the civilian the average person has now actually become the target. It's no longer a Cold War, you know, with America fighting Russia and all that sort of chess moving on the actual board. What I'm seeing is the average person who has the belief that they have the right to free speech, that they have the belief, you know, for free movement, that they have the right to liberty, you know, the right to property, the right to, you know, no searches, etc. They are the ones now that when you look at it, how this game is unfolding, that they seem to be the ones that are actually on the target list. And, you know, even movements like ourselves that, you know, are defined as neo-Luddites and we're not embracing technology as it's coming down the line. I mean, they actually called us, you know, we can be classified as domestic terrorists. On what grounds? I mean, who is making these rules? This is the point. And the rules are being made by, you know, your big military industrial complex companies. You have DARPA, obviously, you know, feeding the actual the funds out there to basically, you know, not collate the data, but what they'll say is, you know, what we need is this particular application fulfilled. And ultimately, you know, when DARPA actually fishes out the money or you know, puts the money on the table, the other military industrial complex suppliers or players will actually start building the, whether you call it the software program or the, you know, whatever application it is to meet DARPA's requirements. So unfortunately, in this monetary system world we live in, where we're finding ourselves is just amazing, where the money is being shuttled into and where money seems to be very abundant, as it always has been, is within the military industrial complex system. And, you know, how can you trust a military company, basically?
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, that's exactly the point. The rules are being made by the psychopaths who are in charge of the multinational corporations like Positive ID, and they're not being made for our benefit. So absolutely, people have to know where these rules are coming from. And you point out the Australian examples, and there are examples, of course, we've seen in the United States with the MIAC report and other things trying to demonize the Patriot movement and libertarians and Ron Paul supporters. And fortunately, people are to a large extent seeing through that. But I think this is the type of plan that works on decades of programming and inundating people with the same idea until eventually they accept it. So that's something that we have to just diligently counteract at every possible opportunity. But getting back to the technology itself, what are some of the ways that you've seen this type of technology proposed as a good idea of being implemented? I think specifically, I remember a couple of years ago reading about plans to put cameras, face scanning cameras in the backs of every seat on an airplane to constantly be monitoring people's faces for any signs of whatever, you know, ill intention people might have while they're on the plane. And who knows, that might have prevented the underwear bombing, which was enabled when the intelligence agencies allowed what's his name, Mutalab, to get on the plane. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that I've seen that type of proposal. Have you seen any other interesting ideas for this type of technology?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it really comes down to how the game is actually played. Is it's really a biometric harvest. So the game itself is just a slippery slope. So currently now you have so many biometric markers. I mean, from face recognition to iris to retina to fingerprint, finger geometry, hand geometry, voice. I mean, you name it. It's now also moving to smell, to gait, to, you know, typing of how one actually types on a keyboard, like keyboard stroke markers. You have ear biometrics on how to actually identify, you know, the person of when one is speaking into a phone, and the actual ear canal on how it actually, you know, transmits the sound frequency back. So it's a case of it's all intertwined, James. That's the point. It's all the companies are, you know, it's like a push-pull system. There's certain things that are moving us into this particular system, and that would be, you know, through, let's say, America stating, look, we're moving towards a universal ID card. And part of that process will be they'll state to you, we need to keep the illegal immigrants out. And as a result, all Americans will be able to retain jobs in America. But then you have the other line where, the technology itself is actually coming down the line from neuromarketing. And where neuromarketing basically is a case of where, it's basically brain scanning. So where companies are now moving to, it's getting to a point where they want to harvest and identify and know you as a person, not only from, what they can harvest from Google or from your purchasing records in regards to credit cards, but what you actually think on the most intimate levels within your mind that go beyond the subconscious. So what you will find is, neuromarketing itself, which then obviously ties into, the project Hostile Intent or FAST program from Department of Homeland Security. You have one sector that is coming down the line that is using security, for example, as the driver to, whether it's to map your brain or to map your physiological body, to map your gait and to map all your other biometric markers. So they'll use safety and terrorism as one particular angle, but then you'll have the other angle, which is, this is neuromarketing, where we can basically bring a product to market for a lower cost, but at the same time, we might actually need to be covertly scanning and pushing beams of light that are projected onto your forehead, so we can actually read your frontal cortex. Sorry. So, it's a case of the same technology is being spun into various sectors, but the end goal is always the same. But you'll have, the universities will use a different angle, the military companies will use a different angle, and then obviously the private corporations will use a different angle. But the end result is, your brain and your body is basically being scanned, your biometric markers are being harvested. And on one hand, they're saying to you, look, this is for neuromarketing. We'll bring products to market for a cheaper cost for you. The other side, they're saying to you, look, we can prevent terrorists from actually boarding the flight, so you can obviously arrive on your flight safely and you can go on to have children and grandchildren. So it's a very, very slick program. And, what the end user will see when they start actually researching it, quite often it is the same agenda. So you'll have, the FBI basically coming out and saying, we want the next generation, biometric system out there basically. So, FBI is basically working on something that will include your DNA records, your 3D facial imaging, palm prints and voice scans, I think, as well. And what that is actually called, that is called multimodal biometrics. Now, when you actually go back to the FAST program, which is the Future Attribute Screening Technology, they too are working on multimodal biometrics. So one has been worked on from the Department of Homeland Security, one is worked on by the FBI, one is worked from DARPA, and then one has been worked on from the private corporations like, Hewlett-Packard or IBM. So I just find it comical that you have all these separate, whether you call it companies or government agencies or corporations, and they all seem to be very fixated on the same goal. And the same goal is to extract as much of the person as possible, to basically bring, bring them down to a binary one and zero where they can go, this is who you are. This is your thoughts have basically been broken down in a mathematical algorithm, and you, sir, are 10101011110001. So, and like you said, this is all based on people that are actually coding the system. I mean, it is all quackery. The problem where this all leads to, though, is how does, let's use a generic person, 60-year-old grandmother who's basically flying from, I don't know, Texas to California, and all of a sudden she gets pulled into this rapid checkpoint screening program from DARPA, and they basically say, look, you're an actual threat to the system. Our system has determined that you basically have malintent, and that you have an intent to commit a crime. How does that person defend himself, James?
Right, exactly. And at first, of course, it'll be phased in as just a pre-screening procedure to see who needs more intense screening, and then they'll be looking for certain things. But eventually, once that's accepted, yes, eventually it will be used as a form of trying to institute some sort of legal or lawful action against this person. And in that case, yeah, exactly. How on earth can you defend yourself against something you haven't done? I mean, it self-evidently it goes against the very idea of jurisprudence, but unfortunately, yeah, it's where we're heading. Well, you're right. This touches on just the, I guess, the same thread of the that's tying together all of our conversations. We think about we talked out recently about the mad quest to extract everyone's DNA and get that stored in various databases, and that's just another extension of the mad quest to get everyone's biometric details and get them stored in databases. And you're right. It's all this not even biological reductionism. It's not even just saying that everyone's just a sum of their biological parts, but even going further, it's binary reductionism. Everyone's just a series of ones and zeros that represent those biological parts, and it's this quest to get everyone reduced to the state where we can all be uploaded into machines. And it's just such an insane idea, but unfortunately it's evident absolutely everywhere throughout our society.
And I mean, what you brought up in regards to, you know, this being a global agenda, it is really a case of taking man, if you like, with all the possibilities we have, and you know, in the name of protecting, you know, I mean, not privacy but freedom, you know, they go on to say that, you know, the FAST program, for example. They said, what is the actual benefit behind this? And the guy behind it said was, you know, to restore a sense of freedom. And for me, going through two checkpoints and having to answer to some goon who's basically there to you know, and it would be a numbers game. You know, how many people can we actually prove a terrorist, even though they might not be? It is a numbers game because funding will continue to flow as long as you can actually prove that the system that you have set up and, you know, the critical measurements that you know, that are working in real time are actually flagging terrorists, if you like, even though we might have a 20% failure rate and we're locking up 20 people out of 100 that are totally innocent. The point is the grants will keep flowing as long as we can obviously say, look, you know, this data is peer-reviewed, it's bulletproof. And, you know, the work that you've done with ClimateGate, if it's one community I simply do not trust anymore, it is the science community, because they are really very much dependent on grants. And we all know, you know, where the grants come from. But unless one ends up being at a point where the grant that has been issued to achieve a specific goal, if that specific goal isn't met, does that mean funding is obviously cut next time? And the answer is absolutely yes. So the people within universities quite often do not want to go out and step into the real world. They're quite happy working where they are, and they also know on what side their butter is or their bread is buttered. So it's quackery from the very beginning, simply because it's just tied into a monetary system. And it's quackery when you look at the military-industrial complex, who have, you know, other agendas to drive home. I mean, look at the war in Iraq. I mean, you know, people go on about it all the time, but America's not leaving. I mean, the timeline keeps shifting. So,
but it's, you know, change, Greg.
It is. You know, it's you know, they're happy there. We've had reduced civilian casualties. The Reaper and what's the other drone called? The Reaper and the I can't remember.
I want to say Raptor, but I know that's wrong.
Oh, it's along those lines. It's never good. It's like, right, the one's the Reaper and the other one's the I can't remember. Just pick a bad name. That's what they are. And that's where it's moving. We're moving into a world where, you know, the human is actually being reduced, like you said, to a binary one and zero. And then ultimately the goal is to have, you know, artificial intelligence or the machine and the program basically making decisions, you know, for these organizations. The question, though, that I have is I just simply can't understand what the driving agenda is, why there is this lust, and, you know, why is DARPA pushing for, you know, automated drones? Why are they pushing for, you know, DARPA to basically have, you know, the process of collating data in real time? But more than that, executing decisions not based on actual humans, actually based on algorithms. And, you know, just because something has been coded and is an algorithm, it doesn't mean the solution it spits out is correct. But I also view that as being, you know, the glorification and the worship of the machine age. I mean, it's just everywhere around us. It's really the humanization of robots, and robots obviously becoming human.
Right. Well, I think for the lower levels, I think it's promoted in that form. But I suspect that the parasite psychopaths at the top of the pyramid have been sold on an idea that they're going to be uploaded into the mainframes, and they're going to be able to live forever through this technology, where the average plebe, of course, will die off when they're, you know, eradicated with the rest of the organic life. But
one mouse click away from the trash can, as they say.
There you go. Exactly. That's a horrible thought, but there you go. It's maybe not so far in the future.
I mean, if one is uploaded into a mainframe, like realistically, most people can't even meet the budget these days. You know, people are having home foreclosures. How will it work? You know, I mean, people upload themselves into this mainframe. Who will actually police the mainframe? Who will look after the data packs? Who will underwrite the whole system? It's all just ridiculous. It's just all plainly ridiculous. But the movement itself, you know, the human plus transhumanist movement has got massive traction that we're seeing. And it's quite often with people that I went to, you know, university with, you know, within IT, and those people are different. They truly, whether you want to say the word worship, but they are truly into, you know, hardware, software, and the progression of man by utilizing technology. So, you know, you have many areas that, you know, how this agenda is obviously being promoted, and then obviously, you know, the promotion of, you know, we can help the people that can't walk, the people that can't see. We can help the, you know, the lame, the blind, the sick. We can cure world poverty, you know. So it's very hard, you know, when they release products like, you know, the bionic eye, and you have a guy who can actually now see through the sensors on his actual tongue. So the technology is just simply mind-boggling, but from our perspective, it's very hard to go and argue with technology that is actually helping some people. But ultimately, it is a double-edged sword. It is a double-edged sword, and that's what makes this whole chess game more than interesting, you know.
Yeah, well, it's certainly interesting, and it's interesting to watch the pieces move around on the board, but we always have to keep in mind what the overall strategy is and where things are headed, so we can hopefully checkmate the other side before they get there. But I guess, going back to sort of the basis for our conversation, which is the idea of this mind-reading machines, certainly we've seen a breakdown in mind-machine barriers in a number of ways recently, and I was just noticing up on WeThePeopleWillNotBeChip.com in the news section, typing words with your brain, portable, easy to wear mind speller. We see stories like this coming out on pretty much a daily basis now. So talk about some of the technologies that are coming out in this vein.
Absolutely. I mean, look, pick any body part from, you know, the six, he was the $6 million man back then. But, you know, Steve Austin is just around the corner, basically. So we'll be seeing bionic eyes. We'll be seeing bionic legs. We'll be seeing, you know, new heart valves, blood cells, you know, as we move to nanotech. So the point behind this is it's a case of realistically the average person just being familiar with what is actually happening up in regards to the actual human plus transhumanist movement. And once that actually occurs, you will then find the uptake will actually be quite high. And then there will be a you know, whether you want to call it a magic bullet or there will be some invention that will just pop out of nowhere where hypothetically, let's say you could actually upload a particular part into your mind that, you know, was just a mathematical calculator. Now, you know, the average person out there has been conditioned to see, you know, Neo within the Matrix. Even though he, you know, defeated the Matrix in the end, he was, you know, still taking brain uploads. So even though, you know, the Matrix was had a very good storyline to it, there was still some very good predictive programming concepts in there that did permeate through. To make brain uploads seem, you know, something that the average person should adopt, could adopt, but more than that, you could adopt it and then actually go beat the dark side, if you like. So what we are predicting is that there will be some invention, you know, just around the corner. And like you said, James, there is new, you know, new technology coming out almost on a daily basis. It's not something that is... You know, it's not something that you have to wait for months. I mean, it's just a case of just waiting on a daily basis and something will, you'll just go, wow. I mean, who would have thought? So, yeah, to go back to answer your question, it's really a case of every part of the human body is realistically being worked on, and the point behind it is to integrate the man into the machine. And then once we get to that point, you know, what is a microchip? It is, you know, it's just basically like a mosquito bite. It's no big deal. And, you know, this is the slippery slope we're on.
That's right. And the brain chip is undoubtedly coming down the line, and they're prepping us for it in a number of ways. But I would venture to say that we already have, to a certain extent, a type of brain chip. It's just outside of our heads at the moment, but it just has to be implanted. And I say that because I think about how the internet and various technologies, MP3 players and things, have really in significant ways changed the way I live my life and changed the way the types of information I have access to on a daily basis, and things that would have been unthinkable 10 years ago are now just part of my daily reality. And because of that, I do have a 100 or 1,000-fold greater knowledge of the world and understanding about what's happening in the world than I ever could have without all of this technology. Yeah. But in another way, it's really prepping me to keep going along that next step and that next step to keep getting more and more information. And the way they lure you in is with these new technologies. And as you've said before, you know, companies like Apple know how to make this all look so sexy and so wonderful and the must-have item. So I think we are already being led along that path. And the next step is really just to condition us that the physical invasion of this technology into our bodies is the next barrier that we have to cross.
Yeah, and look, what you brought up with Apple is very important, because the technology itself, I mean, you know, you have some of the greatest marketing companies in the world, you know, with Apple being, I guess, the company who not only understands user interface. I mean, you can give the iPhone to a child and he can basically, you know, quite quickly figure out how the actual operating system works. You know, it's eluded Microsoft, but that's not the point. The point is what we'll be seeing this year from Apple, and obviously the wording can change. You'll have a product which is called iKey, and what iKey will do, it'll allow you to actually enter your home, without actually utilizing the keys. So radio frequency ID tied in. You'll obviously have an, you know, whether it's an app or just built in. And you know, your phone can then obviously become your keys. And then you will have you know, iWallet, which will obviously, you know, bring in the contactless pay system. So once you then go to 4G, and you actually start seeing the adoption of mobile phones, where, you know, we were at 3.9 billion in 2008, and they're predicting 5.9 billion people will actually have a mobile phone by 2012. The goal to get everyone online, it's nearly there. It's a case of nearly everyone in the world will actually be online. And that has been a massive agenda from, you know, the elite, because if you can obviously move everything online, you are realistically digitizing humanity. I mean, we're getting to a point where people spend so much time on, you know, social networking. You know, people receive a message on their phone, they have to answer it immediately. People are sending SMSs while they're driving. You know, technology is really now part of our lives. And, you know, if I said to you, you know, 20 years ago, before the internet was even around, that, you know, people would actually be doing transactions online, you could have contactless pay transactions, you know, products that are totally, you know, beer bottles and cereal boxes will actually have RFID that will have their own web pages, and will actually, you'll be able to actually query, you know, where has this beer bottle actually been purchased from? Where is it at? Who is it being in contact with? And did it actually make it to the tip? I mean, you know, where it's going is just absolutely staggering. But it's not that; it's the pace that everything is currently moving at now, where you know, as mentioned before, we can do up to 20 to 30 news articles a day, and we just stop at that because that's already too much data for us. I mean, you know, any more, I'll have a meltdown.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. In fact, I would really, really, once again, suggest people go to WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com and take a look at the front page and just look at the number of articles that have been gone up in the last 2 or 3 days, and they're all horrifying in their own unique way, aren't they?
We actually now have wakeup.tv, so people don't have to type out WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. So it's just www.wakeup.tv. So,
you know, it sounds like a simple thing, but that will in fact get you a lot more traffic, won't it?
I know. Like we said, people are lazy.
Yeah,
I've had people email us just going, how am I going to type this out? It's just, oh, look.
Unbelievable. Well, actually, on that note, while we're talking about this, I've had a question for a while now, and if I have it, I'm sure some of my listeners must have it. Do you have any RSS feed? I'd love to subscribe to an RSS because I use that in my toolbar, but I don't
that
seem
to. Soon, actually, we will have that soon. So, yeah, that's been something that we'll get around to.
All right.
What we are noticing, though, is there's a lot more community that is actually now on Facebook. So, We are actually getting some very good traction on that, and people are actually starting to, you know, have open discussions where, you know, what do we do? Where do we go beyond legislation? People can see that this is an agenda, you know, with the microchipping, the biometrics. It's not that hard to piece it all together. I mean, realistically, if you're just the average person, even if they were half asleep, if they spent the time, there is no denying that there is a web and an agenda that is closing down on mankind. And it's not to protect you or to, you know, ensure your safety. It's really, we're moving down to the point where I just call it, you know, the branding of the human species. It's a case of that there really is a push and a move for the, whether you want to call it the master or the perceived master, to move to a point like we've seen in history where it is to brand the livestock, if you like, you know. So I'm certainly not going to be part of that program, and I hope as many people join us as possible.
Right, well, there you go. The web is being spun in order to catch us, so we have to use the web in an intelligent way, but be aware that playing with fire is going to get you burnt at some level. So you have an interesting poll up at wakeup.tv at the moment. Where will you draw the line? And I'm interested to see how that vote turns out, because it's again, it's an important question.
And look, this is the point, is people need to have a line, and people need to have a line in sand, and then also there needs to be a line in concrete. So, I mean, I have, you know, little things where for me, I will not, as, and I've mentioned this before on your radio show, I will not be purchasing a 4G phone. So for me, the 3G does its job. I can obviously access the internet, but I do not need a radio frequency ID card. Basically in, you know, my actual phone, because once you couple, you know, an RFID chip with a compass, with a GPS, with, you know, marketing where it's going, which is basically based on location-based advertising. So what you will be seeing is very much a push to for you to give up your actual position in the world, and then obviously services will be pitched based on your location and based on where you're going to from there. And then this data is obviously collated, and you know, they can build a much better picture of who you are, your purchasing trends. And then similar to, you know, the the FAST program that we discussed in regards to actually predictive, or not predictive, but to actually, you know, sort out pre-crime, if you like, they will then start pitching products based on what they think you might want. Now, when it gets to that, where my biometric markers are being harvested, whether you call it from CCTVs that are actually capturing, you know, my facial biometric or my iris scan and the like, and they go, oh, Mr. Greg Nicoletis, you purchased, you know, one Big Mac last week. How about we do the new quarter pounder at, you know, 50 cents each? I think that's where there needs to be a revolt. I mean, I have a mind, I can critically think, I can choose the products that I want to choose. I do not need algorithms, machines, and really invasive marketing techniques to the point where, you know, with neuromarketing, where they actually want to scan your brain so that they can sell more product. It's a case of, you know, I just want to see people taking a more aggressive approach when we actually get to that, and you know, we're close to that. We, you know, to give people an idea, like electronic billboards, you know, are currently at, I think, 10% of all billboards, and you'll start finding those billboards will then start becoming more interactive. We'll start fitting within the Internet of Things, where everything has an RFID tag, everything is cross communicating, and then you'll start having, you know, the data will be cross-correlated and then obviously monetized. So, you know, in this world we live in, everywhere we move, we are realistically leaving a trail of who we are as people, our purchasing trends, what we like, what we don't like. Social networking is giving a big insight into our personalities, you know, who we are as people. Half the time we are freely giving this information up. And look, I'm guilty as charged, but at the same time, you know, I'm using this vehicle to get a message out, and I really don't care. I'm at a point where, you know, I will obviously protect my privacy to a point, but, you know, if you are running a movement, I mean, people don't want to see you hiding behind a beer bottle, if you like, and have that as your avatar.
That's very true. It's very true, isn't it? Yes, that's exactly right. That's why I've always used my name associated with my work, and I'm not afraid to show my face, because we have to stand up for what we believe in, and we have to show that we are not the criminals with something to hide. We are the, you know, the people who really are concerned with what's happening, and we are the ones in the right, and we can stand up against all of this that's happening right now. So this is an empowering message to leave things on. Tell people how they can get involved with wakeup.tv and get join in the movement.
What we're doing is we're moving far more to a take action plan, a case of we'll soon have a take action form sheet So we're actually designing the template. All you have to do is copy that and send it through to your, you know, your member of parliament, if you like. And what we're hoping to become is just the hub for, you know, if you live in Ireland, we will have the Ireland contact details. We'll have the gentleman within, you know, parliament or within their particular government structure on who would be the actual person to contact in regards to, you know, electronic devices, medical health records, etc. So, you know, as mentioned before, James, just like with your work, we can only do so much. I mean, we can provide the tools, we can provide the videos, we can provide the momentum, we can provide, you know, we sweat blood, sweat and tears for this movement. But what we need to have is people to stand up and say, look, my life is of value. I do not want to be treated like inventory or nor branded like cattle. I do not want to go online to basically worship a mainframe and serve the interests of megalomaniac, psychopathic Fortune 500 companies that, you know, have got that have track records of basically exterminating, you know, millions of people within World War II with Nazi Germany. So nothing much has changed from those times. You still have the same players, and obviously I'm referring to IBM and you know, Raytheon and the like. So nothing has really changed, and I think that's where for me, I mean, if you can obviously look at history, I mean, I don't want to see history repeat itself. It's just plain stupid on the highest level. I mean, if we can look at history even only 60, 70 years ago and say, look, you know, this is what's happened and this is looking very similar to what was actually occurring back then, you know, surely we can get motivated as human beings to ensure at the very least that nothing like that happens again.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. Greg Nicoletos, wakeup.tv, thank you once again.
Thanks, James. It was excellent.